Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. November 13, 2020. A white spot on the map of creation. The Creator created the creatures and the environment for their existence. That is why we feel that we live in this world surrounded by inanimate nature, the entire universe, as well as plants, animals, and people on this earth. We all live according to the rules and laws established by the Creator, the common upper force of nature. Then the question arises, why is there something in this system that is outside this law that can be good or bad and cause doubt? It is as if there is some ambiguity and uncertainty in nature, a white spot in which different options and doubts are possible as to whether the result will be good or bad. But the Creator purposely left one vague, misty area inside creation, a white spot where we exist. He wanted us to use all the resources given to us, and build in this spot conditions, a country, society, the world, the galaxy, just as the Creator would have made them, but He entrusted it to us. Therefore, we must study which properties the Creator has given us, and which He has not given us. And with the help of all of them find out what the Creator is, what His desire is, and what is missing in creation to make it the perfect state intended by the Creator. Thus, the Creator has started the creation, and we fulfill and finalize it, and attain His desire, capabilities, acting forces, and the system. It turns out that a part of creation was completed by the Creator and a part was not. But we can use all the parts of creation that He has created to make it into a perfect, fully connected form. From the word ashlama, completion, that is, shlemut, perfection, comes the word shalom, peace, the word of the Creator, His name. Our task is to establish peace in the world. From the third part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson November 8, 2020, writings of Balha Sulam. Peace in the world. Michael Leitman, on Quora, will humanity ever be united? Humanity will unite in the distant future, but at the moment unity is far from being any kind of priority. In other words, a common desire for humanity's unity to surface in the global public is still unripe, even though we are developing in that direction. In order to unite, we need to want unity above and beyond the many egoistic, divisive and materialistic forms that we naturally desire, and we still lack such a desire. We might get hints of it at times, and we can indeed involve ourselves in educational and support systems to more optimally develop a desire to unite, but nonetheless, we still have to undergo various stages of growth until our desire ripens to want unity above all else. Humanity's final state is a single unified organism. In that final state, humanity consists of different people, groups and interests, as each has his or her own unique route and development from that route. However, we all share a common understanding of a common unifying goal, and we construct ourselves such that we reach spiritual and worldly balance. In other words, we will reach a state where we, all of humanity, consciously share the same goal, and create a tremendous atmosphere of support and encouragement to achieve that goal. Mutual support is of utmost importance in this new unified humanity that needs to arise after these tough times we are currently enduring. We are thus headed toward the creation of a single system of humanity where people will uphold the idea that uniting is more important than giving in to naturally conflicting views and drives. And we will seek to mutually support one another in order to build this unification. When people with opposing viewpoints connect to reach a common goal outside of themselves, they will exist in total harmony and balance. We are still unripe for the unity of humanity though. We require further development until we develop a sincere desire for humanity's unity, as well as the realization that it is impossible to achieve that goal on our own. When we reach that stage, though, we will start bearing witness to immensely positive changes in our lives. We will gain the support of a positive unifying tendency dwelling in nature, and experience a newfound balance among each other and with nature beginning to take flight. Who selects the people in the 10? Question. There is a law of heterogeneity of communication systems according to which people should be different. If they were the same, they would cancel each other out. It is the connection of opposite people that is one of the basic principles of communication. It turns out that you need to select different people in the 10. Should we pick them ourselves? Answer: no, not in any case. Nature does it. We don't even know how it is that we find ourselves in a group striving for a spiritual goal, and we must accept it as an environment in which we can develop properly. Question. Let's say that I, as a curator, was given a group of 200 people for me to integrate. Naturally, all people are different in character, status, etc. Should I mix them spontaneously, or see who works where, who studied where, what kind of education they have? Try to make them match in qualities? Answer: first of all, we need to give them a general initial course so that they will listen, look closely, and as they say, sniff each other. And then gradually they will divide themselves into certain groups because people usually attract or move away from each other. And you will see how they connect with each other by their inner intuition. Do not force them together. We must enable the connection to start with the correct actions, and then it will be clear who is moving toward each other, who is more comfortable with whom. And then continue this process on higher levels. From CapTV's Communication Skills, August 21, 2020. Who will survive? All of nature is built on the aspiration for more complex types of connection. Our task is to learn from it to connect in order to build our lives analogous with what we see in nature. Question: how is this law of cooperation manifested in society? We also see that other, rather strict laws are operating in nature. We cannot take them just the way they are and apply them to society. Answer: even these rigid laws act in the name of compact connection of all the qualities of nature into one single whole. And if somewhere we see mutual destruction, confrontation, then we must understand that this is still working in the same direction in order to bring nature to a single system. Remark: if, for example, we take the simple law of the survival of the strongest, we do not want to live in a society according to the law of the jungle. My comment: it depends on how we interpret the concept of the strongest. We see that the physically strongest person does not survive. The practical person survives as they know how to use the environment rationally and direct it to the achievement of a higher goal of nature. And when a coarse force that holds up everything under itself is in action, nothing works out. Everything is acting in a very intelligent and multifaceted system. You cannot say that now some kind of wave is going to come and it will arrange everything or destroy everything. Whatever happens, it still creates some opportunities for new connections. Nature aspires from the simplest species to more complex ones. Question: can we take the law of homeostasis, which we can clearly feel in our body, and transfer it to society? How is this law manifested in society, or is it impossible to see it? Answer: all this is relative. Although our society is far from perfect, it needs all sorts of people, strong and weak, smart and stupid. In general, humanity must be very diverse in order to be able to correctly connect from this diversity and create an integral, complete form. Nature strives for diversity, not for making one person strong and giving him power over the whole world. We see that it is not the strongest who survives, but not the wisest either. All possible combinations of right and left forces are necessary. The one who can most optimally accumulate within himself various qualities and use them rationally survives. From CapTV's Communication Skills, August 21, 2020. How does consciousness emerge? Question: how does Kabbalah interpret consciousness? How is it related to intention and desire? Answer: consciousness is built from identifying an external source, informational field, and does not exist on its own. To the extent that we begin to feel the influence of an external force upon us, we can say that consciousness appears in us. You can connect to the consciousness outside of a person by your inner development. We exist in this information field, and therefore, by tuning ourselves to it, we receive consciousness. Question: what is subconsciousness? Answer: this is all psychology that makes such distinctions. Kabbalah does not deal with it. Comment: nonetheless, there are some things that I do consciously and some I do subconsciously. Answer: naturally. Our actions and the impact of nature on us are practically the two sources of our existence. Using the term consciousness, I imply our perception of the influences of nature, their analysis, and decision-making how to act under their influence. From CabTV's Communication Skills, August 7, 2020. Can there be intention without action? Question. Balhasulam writes in his articles about the laws of communication. According to the first law, every member of society is obliged to receive everything necessary for him. To what does this refer, human relationships or material goods? Answer: we must create a society in which each person can receive everything he needs for existence, because the second condition is his return to society. And in order to give, he must live normally. Therefore, the first law determines the second. Question: the law of bestowal obliges society to work for its benefit. What did Balhasulam mean when he wrote about bestowal? After all, any person works 12 hours a day. Answer: this does not count as giving. Bestowal is my inner calculation that I work for the sake of others. It is quite possible that a person who works 12 hours a day works all the time for himself and does not think about others at all. It's about intention. Question: that is, the work of a person in society, when he has to produce something, give something, this is one level. And the second level is the level of thought and intention, for which he does all this. Is it possible to work only at the level of thought and intention? Let's say I don't want to work physically. Answer: the point is not this, but whether your work, meaning some of your abilities, is necessary to society. Based on this, you can choose. It is about how you can participate in communal life in a way that will benefit you. Question: can there be intention without action? Answer: no. Without action, nothing can be at all. At any level, mechanical or internal, at the level of desires or at the level of intentions, but the action must be. Otherwise, you will not be able to tell what thoughts a person has. From CabTV's Communication Skills, August 21, 2020. Unnatural attitude. Question: any normal person wants to live. But when a doctor advises him to get rid of some bad habit that causes a disease, he has no motivation for it, even if there is a threat of death. What is the reason for this unnatural attitude? Answer: he has a very vague idea of the connection between death and a certain deed, such as smoking, that can lead to death. If he had known that one puff pushes him to the grave, he might not have done it. From CabTV's Management Skills, August 28, 2020. Everyone has their own capabilities. Question: there are several ways to define the meaning of life and its purpose. First, introspection, when a person wants to know what is happening to him and the world around him. Second, the environment that discusses these issues, and a person learns from them. Third, working on attracting teachers. That is, you can find a teacher, a sage, who will tell you what is the meaning of life. Naturally, you have to believe him and follow him. Maybe there is some other method? Answer: in the course of my life, I have lived in several regions of the world, in Belarus, Russia, the Baltics, and Israel. I traveled to various parts of the world from China and Japan to Europe and North and South America where I met with my students. Each country has its own approach, its own history, and its own capabilities. I am engaged in revealing the tools for understanding the meaning of life to a person. And then, with the help of these tools, he tries to rise to the level of the upper force that created him and guides him so that he would be able to realize what he was created for, how he is controlled, and how he can be in connection with this power. From CapTV's Management Skills, July 2, 2020. New Life 455. Europe, a blend of nations.
Hello everyone, thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Rav Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello. Hello everyone. Hello Nitza Mazoz. Hello. Today we'd like to talk to Rav Lightman about Europe. Europe, a very special collection of very unique people and nations, and we'd like to understand this phenomenon from a broader aspect to understand what happened in the past 100 or 200 years to better understand where we are today and where we're going. Nitza. Okay, so maybe I'll start from the end, actually. Today, Europe is called a sleeping, tired giant that it's kind of crumbling. When we look at this continent, beyond the suffering of the citizens there, undoubtedly that it influences the whole world. We can say that Europe is the infrastructure for all cultures, for the scientific development, for the whole development that we went through as a society, evolutionally speaking. Actually, it lays the infrastructure for all that we know today. And we look at Europe, and we see that something there is really ill, one might say. And we'd like to understand, how did we reach this point that Europe, that seemingly took a step that rationally seems very correct about 20 years ago, that has decided after many wars, many conquerings, much death, to unite, to put their forces together, which sounded the right thing to do, but we see that something doesn't really work there. But in order to understand this, I'd like to go a bit back into the past in order to understand what Europe went through. So, going back about to the beginning of the 19th century, it is an era where until then, the church ruled Europe, people actually felt a belonging to religion. There were kings, there were, the regime was total, and then starts a certain process, which we call the phase of enlightenment, the time of enlightenment, suddenly science starts developing, giving different answers, and gradually starts taking the place of religion, and liberalization starts, and suddenly man becomes the center of the world. Suddenly his freedom and his desire to express himself, and then the French Revolution that was all about freedom. And a person gradually starts to reach a certain state in the in society, the European. Europe reaches a desire to identify with my nation, with a certain group, maybe possible to say that because previously religion united us all and we felt belonging to it, now that religion moved, there is a desire to belong to a group, which is the nation. So what happens in the developmental process of human society that suddenly it gets a need to acquire some national identity, to feel some very clear definition, maybe independence? Nature is the will to enjoy, the desire to fill oneself with different fulfillments, which are felt as pleasure. And in accordance with the development of the desire in a person, then he is drawn to fulfill himself with these or those pleasures. This is what we mean by history, development, evolution, and so on. It's all in all, no more and no less than the change within the desire, which is the most basic, fundamental, inner essence of every creature. If we're talking about people that went through a very long process, very special process, interesting process for a researcher, we're talking about historians of Europe, suppose. It's a very special place, because that's especially where the inhabitants of Babylon fled to. Yosef Plavius writes about it. This is what Greece and Rome worked at, especially Rome, because it introduced its province, the parts of its empire, up to Scotland, and furthermore, into Northern Europe and Western Europe, East. Alexander the Great, and also the Romans later on invaded North Africa, and Lebanon, and Syria, up to India. There were many interesting historical periods that didn't happen in other countries. The ego was very big, by the Romans, by the Greek, different kinds of ego, different periods went by quickly. Development without religion and with religion, the development of religions. After they have destroyed the land of Israel, they absorbed from us their religions, Christianity, and then they started publicizing it, this new religion of theirs. And then it caused the development of wars, war over control, for over 1,000 years, until it came down, because the will to receive every time comes down in a person, and it demands a person to every time make changes, both in religion and in the dissemination and connection with other nations, new goals. All that happened in Europe this way. But again, it's because many different kinds, species, nations back from Babylon fled there. And through struggle between them gave birth to more and more different kinds of desires. Such nations that today There are 30-something countries all in all in the continent, and that's such a big continent. If we take the South American continent, you know, only Brazil and Argentina, they cover almost all of Europe. Something special, the change between the places. If we take Spain, Italy, Germany, in Germany there were dozens and dozens of small countries until about 200 years ago they united. In France, to this day, there are many parts which are counter to one another, that don't want to be a part of each other, but they, you know, they're already old, tired, lazy, so you have Verona in the north, and Catalonia in Spain, as opposed to the rest of Spain, like in Italy, North Italy and South Italy. And so in each and every country, there's a difference, economically wise, psychologically, socially, the structure of society, their history, the different calculations, political differences. Sometimes it's up, sometimes it calms down, but well, we see about 35 countries in Europe. We can easily divide them into another 35 and even more. We remember the wars in Ireland, how for many, many years Ireland wanted to disconnect from England. And even if we take all the North European countries, there are big differences between the countries. In former Czechoslovakia, now you have the Czech Republic and the Slovenian Republic and each and every developed country, as if points out the different kinds of people there, and they don't agree to be under a common regime. Each one wants one of his own. Look how a person in our times doesn't even want to be married, doesn't want to be with his parents, with his grandparents. Immediately at the age of 15, they go rent an apartment, go to work in order to be disconnected from the parents. And the demand for the freedom, the demand for the kind of isolation, for to disconnect from others, that no one pressures you, the demand for separation, segregation. I'm ready to pay whatever is necessary in order to come to that. And first of all, this gives Europe this special characteristic. We can research and see all these things the world over. When I'm in the States, I see people that are very different, even from neighboring countries. England, obviously, but even Canada. What is there about Canada? All in all, 30 million people over a place that's so big. And there too, nonetheless, there's a desire to divide the Franco-Canadians and the Anglo-Canadians, and more separations on the inside, differentiations. We see that there are two tendencies, and as if they contradict one another. Where on the one hand, when the egoistic desire, the ego develops in a person and the different societies, groups of people, they're more, the differences between them are more conspicuous. On the other hand, the world is closing in, becomes more integral, more connected as a global village, as a small village. and then there's a problem, and what's in each and every moment in history, what's more eminent, either the uniting force or the egoistic force that separates. And that's how we see things. The problem is, we talked about it many times, that were we to unite the Latin countries in South America, that would have been something else, because besides Brazil, it's one language, Spanish, and also the Portuguese language, it's not such a big difference. Brazil could have gotten along with it. But it's one language, one mentality, something very close to one another. Of course, there are differences, but the differences there, you know, between inside a family, there are differences. But in Europe, we see that there are big differences in everything. And these are very essential differences for each and every nation. That it keeps them, that it's close to them, that it's important for them, everything that separates between them and another. The separation is something important. And therefore, a really important thing happened here that just says how humanity doesn't understand the process it's in and how we need to, first of all, think really well. I'm not talking about, you know, listening to the Kabbalah sages, because they started this process based on economical interests, that it's good for Europe to be together, then for sure we'll succeed more, make more. You know, China rose, the U.S. wants to connect with China, the Americans moved their industry there and this way, and also Japan, and in short, Europe and Russia is already awakening, and in those times it was really on its way to freedom. Europe had to be strong in order to see its future as something good. You're talking about the period after the Second World War? No, even later. In those times, I was in Europe. It's the beginning of the 80s, and surely it was felt. Why do they do what they do? There were many places of explanation, why, what for, how. There were these big trailers where each one on the inside is like a museum, like an explanation, action, that you go in there and there are different posts and there are books that you can take about the unity of Europe, why and what for. And if possible, before we reach the union, there's one more thing that I'd like to scrutinize. Okay, so let's follow the questions. Okay, so we reached this state where we understood that more or less in the at the end of the 19th century, there's a desire for nationalism, it rises together, and there's a need for definition, and this definition, what's interesting about it, is that they want to start creating a very clear territory, and naturally accompanies it a struggle in order to... So when I look at this process that society goes through, and you have defined a process at first, there was a very special process, because it was the rulership of that in each place there was sitting someone from the Habsburg family, and as long as this as long as this regime was strong, it united Europe as if one family is in rule. And relatively, it was calm, but it was inside the family, you know, whatever disputes there are. When this regime started falling apart, naturally everything comes to its end and already demands for something to come instead. But it worked till the First World War. And to this day, we as a feel crumbles from that regime of Habsburg. So, even though that there were different problems, but it's pretty small problems. One family was in power, they used to get married between themselves, they even had problems with the genes there that really because everything was locked inside the family. But it kept Europe together, even though there were disputes between the families. Yes. So everything was fine until came a state where the Industrial Revolution, the time of enlightenment, philosophy, science started rising above the power of control, where the purpose of a human being, his development, the image of man started rising above the image of the king and so on. And then all these things started weakening. And let's say that it's a wonder how all these things switch quickly. The English, they found a patent for it from Victorian England to the Elizabethan England. Well, no one looks at it too seriously, but it's as if... But in Europe it didn't hold, in the rest of Europe. And besides, there are problems there as a result of, well, England is England, it's not Europe. But in all of Europe, and especially in Eastern Europe, in Austro-Hungary, in Sarajevo, like the First World War started there, from the killing of the Ferdinand and so on. It's all many, many calculations that they can't calm down. The calculations to this day, like we see with Yugoslavia, how it divided into 5 countries and what's going on there. To this day, there's a trial against Milosevic and no one knows what to do, and the Russians are interfering in it, and who not? And Europe is now intervening in the Ukraine, and Poland isn't afraid of the invasion of the Russians. Didn't end. And who knows? What Rishimot, the will to receive, can bring from the past, and once again nations will start creating these calculations once again. The thing is that if we nonetheless say a few words about the correction has to be that love covers all crimes, meaning that we will simply wait. If we simply wait until it will calm down, it will not calm down, because the world develops in the direction of the big ego more and more, and Europe will not calm down. And even with all of its development and progress, and it will bring it to very hard wars between them. That is, if what need is there to kill one another? Even now that there are no boundaries, do what you want, from here to there, doesn't matter. Our ego, until as long as it is unbalanced, it will demand control. And this control can be on the background of really a pride or something. some previous calculations, like a couple that wants to separate the calculations that they're starting to make, and you know, the lawyer is just sitting next to them enjoying what they pay him, and they're left with nothing after all these trials and didn't reach some kind of an inner compensation. But the main thing is that they fought and fought and fought to the last penny that they have to pay to the Europe has to understand through the dissemination of the wisdom of Kabbalah in it, and no other way about it, in Europe. Yeah, in Europe, that there's a method here that can connect the nations, and if not for this method, then we're facing the Third World War. Two world wars came from Europe, the third will come too. Especially there's another special factor there, which is the Arab population, the Islam, the growing Islam on the inside, yeah? And it will warm all these things up, because they will sit on the side and will enjoy all of these disputes until these countries will equip themselves even more, and then they become even weaker, and then the Islam can invade there and cover Europe with the Islamic flag. That is the future scenery, unless the Europeans will start rising in connection above all calculations. That's what I see. And if they do what you say, if they start connecting, they'll have no problem. Then the connection which they will make according to the formula which the wisdom of Kabbalah offers us by nature, that there's no other solution, that by nature you can investigate, research, and see if they accept it, then really they start uniting, and there will be a united Europe in its true form, and not simply economical or something good for the banks or... All of the unity which they made is a unity which pays off for the tycoons. It is a unity which pays off for those who have the money, for the powerful countries in Europe, and not for the weak countries. France wanted to protect itself a bit from Germany, because physically they were afraid of it. And Germany went for it because they're not afraid, because they're economically strong, and so on and so forth. Switzerland isn't into it. England isn't into it. And then all the rest of the countries. No country actually changed its political form. But everything is for sheer economical benefit without taking into consideration the gaps which exists all through Europe. And you can't unite 35 countries this way. 35 even languages or even more. This is something very, very serious to do it in 20 years. We understand that there was a big mistake made here, that we still don't even feel its intensity, its depth, and how much we'll have to further pay in order to somehow separate. Maybe today they'd like to return to the state as it was before, and they can't. There are many calculations between them. Atop of the calculations that were there before. So there's no way back. That maybe they'd like to do it, but only forward. And forward, there's just one way to connect above all differences. Thank you very much, Rav Lightman. Our time's up. We'll have additional talks about this. Thank you, Nitsa. Stay with us. We'll talk about Europe and the world. Good new life. All the best.